Hello and welcome to the Open Cloud Infrastructure Podcast. I am your host, Sasha Siegman, and today is Sunday, January 15th, 2023, and this is episode 2 with these topics. Your choice of modernization disaster, SWA or FAA. Rackspace's flaming Exchange disaster, using the Red Hat Developer Sandbox to get off the ground within minutes. And part 2 of our Cloud from Scratch series, using KVM to virtualize a 3-node Kubernetes cluster using OpenShift. The FAA 1 ups Southwest Airlines with a complete ground stop on Wednesday. Remember episode 1 when Southwest Airlines came to a screeching halt when their scheduling software fell over and everyone thought, surely this can't get any worse? Well, surely it can. The FAA came to a complete ground stop on Wednesday, January 11th, when a critical system failed and had to be restarted, causing an outage that delayed 1,300 flights, including mine, and caused 100 cancellations. Certainly not as large in numbers as the SWA case, but nationwide and system-wide nevertheless. And guess what caused this failure? Not old software, not old technology, no, everything was working just fine until a contractor failed to follow procedure and made a mistake in copying a file, thus corrupting it and sending the whole system into a tailspin. Now, if you ask me, if a single person can cause this, that's a major failure in operations, but let's not blame the individual. Although I bet that will make a good story at the bar in the future. I have done many nightly maintenance windows updating components and have been lucky enough so far to not fat finger a command, but isn't this all a great case for configuration automation, which is what cloud native promises? So let's look into ways to automate building environments using so-called CI/CD tools. CI/CD standing for Continuous Integration, Continuous Delivery. The promise of CI/CD is that it delivers apps to customers by automating build, test, and deployment of code. CI/CD is a solution to the problems integrating new code can cause for development and operations teams, aka integration hell. It's kind of a big deal in the industry because the speed with which updates are delivered and new releases are deployed is now business critical. Back in the old days, when developers were all working on a single monolithic application, organizations had dedicated people, buildmeisters, to kick off the release. It was a handcrafted, artisanal software release. It was great to watch the old sages do their thing, but it was too slow. What is the 2023 equivalent of a robot army of buildmeisters? I'd say it's going to be ArgoCD. ArgoCD is a declarative GitOps continuous delivery tool for Kubernetes. Why ArgoCD? Application definitions, configurations, and environments should be declarative and version controlled. Application deployment and lifecycle management should be automated, auditable, and easy to understand. That's a principle that's going to fundamentally impact everyone's work in development, operations, or anywhere where code is being worked on collaboratively. For a quick overview of Argo, check out the video links I have added in the show notes. The Argo homepage is on GitHub at github.com/argo-cd. Rackspace's flaming Exchange disaster. A fanatical support, many exclamation marks. That's what I remember back in the 2010s when Rackspace was all the rage. Now their Exchange customers are enraged. You know, things will be bad when the outage notification goes out at 2:49 a.m. Eastern on 12/02/22 with the words, quote, "We are investigating an issue that is affecting our hosted Exchange environments. More details will be posted as they become available," end quote. Most people in the industry knew immediately that one of the reasons could have been a ransomware attack. Ransomware is the bane of the existence of our times. IBM pegs the cost of an average cyber attack at $4.3 million. You can download the IBM report at ibm.com/reports/data-breach. This breach, however, is going to go well over $4 million as the entire business line was eliminated. Rackspace did something that I thought was unimaginable. They threw in the towel and literally said, it's not worth rebuilding, we'll let it crash and burn. And we let our customers self-migrate. Now, how does this relate to open cloud infrastructure? It's a reminder that the internet is a dangerous place and that security can be good, very good indeed, and still insufficient. Rackspace squarely placed the blame on Microsoft for bungling up the text of a notification. I'd say there is a fair bit of arm-waving and finger-pointing going on here, and maybe to avoid legal issues, the blame is shifted to Microsoft. Fact, however, is that according to Rackspace's chief security officer Karen O'Reilly Smith, the company didn't initially patch over concerns that it would cause disruptive authentication errors. Instead, Rackspace only applied workarounds. O'Reilly Smith said that Microsoft's notes on CVE-22-41080 merely described it as a privilege escalation vulnerability and made no mention of the fact that it was part of an RCE chain. This CVE was also known as Proxy Not Shell. Microsoft released patches for the flaw on November 8th, but apparently Rackspace didn't implement the patch. Using the Red Hat Developer Sandbox to get off the ground within minutes. So, as part of our local cloud installation, I want to also give you a sneak peek at what we are going to build eventually. Now, there's a discussion going on within the cloud native community about how complex Kubernetes and the implementation of it is. There's no doubt in my mind that it is too complex to be self-hosted for small organizations. In fact, reasonable people argue that if you aren't a Fortune 500 organization, you shouldn't run your own Kubernetes clusters and only run on managed or hosted Kubernetes. That's quite a claim, and I would say in general that's correct, but how are you supposed to learn how all this works when you can't look under the hood? Well, you can really understand what you can see or take apart, which is my motivation to create this podcast. I think you have to be able to take small parts and study them, then put them together and experiment with them. Only then can you start asking yourself the bigger questions, such as, how is production of something like this going to look like? Do I have the tools and resources to maintain this? What other resources are needed to make this useful to me and my organization? How do I quickly turn this into something useful? So, Red Hat came up with the Developer Sandbox. It short-circuits this setup by offering a hosted version of Red Hat OpenShift, their Kubernetes implementation. The Developer Sandbox for Red Hat OpenShift is a great platform for learning and experimenting with OpenShift. Because OpenShift is built on Kubernetes, the Sandbox is also a great platform for learning and experimenting with Kubernetes. You can go to the Sandbox and learn about a practical implementation, a three-component web application consisting of 1. A back-end RESTful service, 2. A front-end React.js web page, and 3. A MariaDB database. Since this is all portable, we will then take this example application and implement it on our local Kubernetes OpenShift cluster using ArgoCD. But first, let's install the required infrastructure and install OpenShift on our bare metal machine. Part 2 of our cloud from scratch, using KVM to virtualize a 3-node Kubernetes cluster using OpenShift. So in my last video, I did a walkthrough of a RHEL 9.1 installation on a HPDL 360 G8. What's left here is to install another plugin for Cockpit that will make managing virtual machines very simple. This plugin is called Cockpit-Machine. I'm going to install this plugin from the command line like this. DNF install cockpit-machine space libvirtd. Systemctl start libvirtd, systemctl restart cockpit. After the installation, we can find a new menu item in cockpit virtual machines. We need to set up a few things first. 1. A storage pool where the virtual machine files will go, and 2. A private network for our OpenShift cluster. A storage pool is a space that you designate as being available to store virtual machine images. You can use a network location, an iSCSI target, or a file system. In the simplest case, it's a local directory on a machine hosting KVM. In my practical example, I'm going to use the NVMe drive as the storage pool for VMs. A private network in KVM is used to isolate a group of virtual machines so that they can communicate with each other but aren't reachable from the internet. Finally, we need to download the OpenShift installation files. You can get them at console.redhat.com/openshift/downloads. You will need One, the OpenShift command line interface OC. Two, the OpenShift for x86-64 installer. Three, a pull secret, which authenticates your cluster with Red Hat's registry. And four, the Red Hat Core OS ISO. The Red Hat docs provide us with the additional details we need to think about. So let's talk about the minimum system requirements, because we need to create VMs with appropriate specifications. There are three types of VMs we need to create. One, the bootstrap machine. Two, the control node machine. And three, the worker node machine. Whereas this is optional, we can use the control nodes as workers as well to optimize the footprint. Each cluster machine must meet the following minimum requirements. Bootstrap and control plane machines need 4 vCPUs, 16 gigs of RAM, and 100 gigs disk space with at least 300 IOPS. The compute nodes can have 2 vCPUs, 8 gigs of RAM, but still need 100 gigs of disk space and 300 IOPS. Now, why would the compute or worker nodes need less memory than the control plane? Simply put, less overhead and fewer services require less memory. The total memory requirement for the OpenShift cluster are therefore 3 times 16 gigs, it's 48 gigabytes of RAM, and 300 gigs of disk space. There are two additional components we need to install and configure. One, a DNS server, specifically Bind, and two, a load balancer HA proxy. Kubernetes requires name resolution to resolve host names as well as routes, which are the endpoints for your application. I will provide a default configuration for both based on the Red Hat documentation as well as on my own network setup. We will create both of these services from scratch on our RHEL 9.1 base system as another VM on a Bastion host, which is not part of the OpenShift cluster, but in the same network. These two components can run on a 2V CPU and 4GB machine with 100 gigabytes of disk space. This brings the total memory usage to 52 gigs of RAM and 400 gigabytes of disk space. At this point, we have arrived at the logical handoff to my YouTube channel, where you can check out the installation video and how I set up my lab. Hop on over to YouTube and find me as at Open Cloud Infrastructure. Thanks for listening. I appreciate your time, and check back in 2 weeks for another episode of Cloud Native Infrastructure. If you like this show, recommend it to a friend and follow me on Mastodon as sseekman@infosec.exchange. See you soon.